This week, the Tribune podcast joins you from the Sports Media Summit in Cologne. This isn't a conference for Germany's biggest newspapers or broadcasters. Instead, it's where sports brands and clubs from all around Germany meet to discuss the best ways to reach out to football fans. Representatives from Schalke, Borussia Dortmund, Gladbach and many other Bundesliga sides are in attendance, listening to lectures about virtual reality headsets, messenger apps, and any way football fans will be watching the sport in 10 years' time. Yet Tribune isn't here for the flashy presentations, champagne lunches, and to rub shoulders with marketing gurus from across the continent. No, today we're here to talk to the man who runs the marketing team behind one of the most anti-establishment clubs in football, St. Pauli. For those who perhaps aren't aware of St. Pauli, they're a football club based in the second tier of German football. But to their fans and admirers around the world, there's so much more. Although the club had been playing their football down by the Hamburg docks since the start of the 20th century, it wasn't until the mid-1980s until their modern reputation and cult, with a capital K, grew into a phenomenon. Based in the city's Reeperbahn district, famous for wild nightlife, red light district and a very liberal culture, the club very quickly adopted the skull and crossbones as their unofficial logo. In 1981, they were attracting crowds of 1,600 fans. By the mid-90s, they had grown to over 20,000. Although the club's success on the pitch hasn't turned many heads over the decades, there's no denying that Hamburg now belongs to everyone's favourite alternative club. It's impossible to walk around the city without seeing a St. Pauli flag hanging from a pub entrance or skull and crossbones spray-painted on any docile strip of wall. Although Hamburg has its own Bundesliga side, there's only one club that this city seems to adore. Today we met the man who tries to funnel all that energy into something positive for the club. His name is Martin Drust, and fortunately for us, he wasn't hard to spot. Among the gelled back haircuts and tailored suits stood a man in comfortable clothing with long black hair and an accompanying beard. Martin looked more like a rock star than someone who was about to stand in front of his peers and give a 20-minute lecture on sports marketing. Yet what would you expect from someone who works for St. Pauli? We sat down with the Dave Grohl lookalike and began by asking him about the club's reacquisition of the marketing rights to their famous skull and crossbones logo, a five-year battle that only ended last year.
To be honest, I can't tell you that really. It's because the guys from Absolute Merchandising, they did a brilliant job in what they have done in the past with this Jolly Roger, the skull. So they were always on brand. So in this case, I don't think there's any problem. Mm.
So
sometimes even they were more St. Pauli, like the club was.
So it wasn't the club logo, it was the skull and crossbone?
Both logos.
Both logos, okay.
Were owned by them.
Mm. And from a revenue perspective, was it better that it was outsourced to the agency, or do you think there was more potential to have it in-house?
Definitely we have some plans with that, but because they were interested in being successful, so they tried to be successful. So I don't think there's a big difference. Maybe it was not so bad that they made it the part of the last years, because maybe at the club there were more they did more damage to the brand that they did.
Martin, I was recently in Hamburg on holiday.
Oh, okay.
And I was trying to buy some merchandise for friends. Now, I could buy St. Pauli shirts, I could buy St. Pauli mugs, I could buy anything St. Pauli, but I could not find anything HSV, Hamburg, anything at all. It seems as though the city is engulfed by St. Pauli. From a marketing point of view, can you explain why that might be? Or in just how the club seemed to enjoy this monopoly of exposure in Hamburg?
Yeah, maybe. To be honest, no, I can't tell you why this is like you experience. And we know some surveys which say that St. Pauli is more popular than, for example, Hamburg SV. Maybe this is the reason, but if you come, the more you come at the outside of the center of Hamburg, then it starts changing.
Like
then
in the suburbs? And
in the really downtown St. Pauli and this area, I think about 10 kilometers around the center, there's more St. Pauli then.
But when you step outside of Hamburg, and even perhaps outside of Germany, the St. Pauli brand or name seems to have this reputation that perhaps exceeds the club's success on the pitch. Why do you think that might be?
Yeah, because it's not about what's on the pitch, it's about the lifestyle, this kind of anti-establishment behavior, and this sticking to values, and and that this is even not an invention of someone, that this is really the club culture. It's really about football culture, club culture, and there are a lot of people even outside of Germany, which for them we are too big. If I say a place of hope, or no, this is not the right term, but there's a nice German word, Sehnsuchtsort.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a romantic in what people think how maybe football can be, and in some cases we are this kind of football club. A lot of people think really dream of, driven by fans, driven by members, not doing everything just for the money.
And that must put the club in a unique situation, because most football clubs in Germany or around Europe have to almost convince people to, you know, support them and to buy football tops and to watch them on TV. But with St. Pauli, it seems, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems as though you have the support first, and then it's maybe more about trying to harness that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, so how is your job different from someone who does your job perhaps at, say, oh, I don't know, Fortuna Dusseldorf or FC Cologne? How different is it to work at St. Pauli than it is at Cologne or something, or even Hamburg?
A lot of problems other clubs have we don't have. For example, if it comes to ticket sales, we are always sold out. So and other clubs, they are always working on bringing people to the stadium, so this is something we don't have to do. In a lot of stadiums, especially the stadiums which are more on the outskirts, the people leave very, very early the stadium, maybe sometimes 5 minutes before final whistle blow. And in our stadium, the people stay sometimes up to 5 hours after the final whistle, which is annoying. No, which is not annoying, but that the people stick there and drinking and buying things, this just happens. So these things we don't have to do. I think what's really different is this work with the fan culture. Like I tried to explain a little bit, that we are very participative, so we are talking a lot with the fans and discussing things, and not everything, of course, but a lot of things we discuss, and I think this is really different from what other clubs do.
Well, my next question leads in quite well to my next question, because although St. Pauli is very popular for tourists and for fans from other countries, it also has a very die-hard support. So how do you juggle trying to sell the club abroad, but also trying to stay loyal to those die-hard fans who live in Hamburg and come to the Reeperbahn, you know, every week?
Yes. So we don't advertise this somewhere that we advertise in New York or London. Come to Hamburg and watch St. Pauli. So the people just come. These are not that many people. So and in the end, most of them who come are people who are looking for this kind of football experience. So we know that a lot of people from England come by EasyJet or Ryanair and watching a match, having a good time and spend less money than buying a ticket at the Premier League club. And this kind of people are very appreciated. So we don't have this kind of bachelor party tourists coming to the stadium. Mm-hmm. So because of this, there's no problem. Yeah. Sure. So we are not this kind of anti-establishment anymore. We are more productive, productive is maybe not the right word. We are more positive in doing things, changing things, not just saying no. Huh?
Yeah.
And maybe for example, in other countries, we have to tell more this old St. Pauli stories from 10 years ago, this anti-establishment.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we will have a different kind of approach in these countries.
That sounds like you have a lot of opportunity, though, like you said, because for Schalke, for example, Schalke have the whole kind of mining story and how Schalke developed from Gelsenkirchen, quite a working class city, and that's a very good thing to sell. Other clubs maybe don't have that, so that's a real opportunity. I mean, you mentioned the United States. What kind of markets are you looking at? Because obviously some markets maybe don't fit the St. Pauli image because of politics and what have you. So is that something that you take into consideration?
Yeah, it's UK, Scandinavia, US.
Mm-hmm. Is that because of proximity or because
No, this is because we know there are fan clubs already. We know there's some interaction, some desire or something like that. Or for
Martin, can I put you on the spot now? If you were to rank German football teams in terms of reputation or popularity, where would you say St. Pauli are? If you have to say Bayern, Dortmund, blah blah blah, where would St. Pauli be?
Yeah, I think this table I showed there, which is a study which comes out every year, I think this is maybe the place we are.
Third or fourth.
Yeah, there's Bayern Munich, Borussia Dortmund. Then maybe. Then it's the Schalke, Gladbach, Köln, St. Pauli. So these are the runner-ups, I would say.
And obviously now with the consumer changing so much towards digital, towards mobiles, what is St. Pauli doing to try and get into that kind of space without, of course, losing the values that it has, which obviously is a very complex thing to balance.
These are the things we try to do from next season on. So becoming much more digital and content driven than we are now, and because of the stories we have to tell, and especially our fans can tell. This is what we want to bring together, and maybe becoming even not just a hub for St. Pauli Football Club, maybe for the district, the borough, because there are so many people doing so many things, and maybe we can be the one bringing them more reach, for example.
You see Union Berlin as well, in their area of Köpenick, that have this, I don't know, similar, but they have the same kind of values, perhaps. They have maybe they're trying to sell this football experience that is similar. Do you think that now that obviously in German football things have changed quite a lot with Leipzig and Hoffenheim and Wolfsburg and Leverkusen, that's a very unique selling point to have? Because when we've been to even Stuttgart and Bremen, the football experience in terms of the, I'm going to say the old-fashionedness, but the kind of cool values, the culture, a lot of that's beginning to change. Do you think that's a bad thing for German football? That clubs like Leipzig, Wolfsburg, Leverkusen is changing the fan culture?
Yeah, I think it really depends. In my personal experience, not as a professional, in my personal experience, I would say at Leipzig today is more fan culture than at Wolfsburg. Because this area is very desperate of professional football, and the fans from Leipzig at our stadium were always very, very nice people. So that was fun having them there. In the end, I think for a brand like St. Pauli or for a football club for St. Pauli, it's good. Mm. If there's someone like Hoffenheim or Wolfsburg, or because of because we are the other role model,
offers contrast.
We are the contrast, and with this we try to be successful in the way we can be successful, and they try to be successful in the way they can be successful. So there's no. There are no hard feelings, or that we wish someone bad luck or something. No? Okay. It's we always try to be very professional by not dreaming. Mm-hmm. By we want to be this kind of football club, mm-hmm. and we want to be successful, but by our own hard work. Yeah. So and that we are doing a good job, and not because there's someone coming and giving us 100 million, for example.
That might be a good time to stop.
Thank you so much for your time.
Well, I hope you enjoyed episode 7 of the Tribune podcast. If you haven't yet, you can check up on last week's episode, in which I had the pleasure of speaking to Miguel Delaney about the current Spanish Revolution and what German football can learn from the Spanish leagues. Once again, we'd like to thank you for joining us. And if you can, and if you are enjoying this series, then please do jump on iTunes and leave us a rating and even leave us a review. And you can always get in touch with us on Facebook and Twitter at The Tribune Podcast. We'll see you next week.